Welcome to Women's Words, a program bringing you the written work of the women of Minnesota.
My name is Amy Waugh, and I live in Duluth, Minnesota. I'm going to be reading the preface to my memoir titled Remnants of the Disappeared, and this selection is called Somewhere in Colorado. In Colorado, in the community I was to be raised in, the towns were named for the land. Basalt after the rock, aspen after the trees, marble, Crystal City, Glenwood Springs. Our backyard was connected to the mountain behind it. When I looked out our living room window, the chain-link fence dissolved in my line of vision and all the land was one. In winter, when snow covered the fences, my eyes could travel up the line of white as it rose steadily up Basalt Mountain until it finally stopped at blue. That blue was a place I knew I'd get to someday. It was a blue that shimmered as if it were the mountain's aura. The sun reflecting off the land above snowline gave the horizon around it an extra glow. It was a blue reminiscent of sapphire, my birthstone, shining on my mother's ring finger, the last of three. Basalt is a volcanic rock that makes up most of the seafloor. The rock formation that rose out of my yard was once part of the sea. An acre of land served as my backyard, and the mountains were attached to it. The backyard is the place where children dream and play. I never saw the mountains as being separate from it. For what were the mountains there for if not to explore, to climb? In the yard where I sat on a swing and kicked my pink sneakers toward the sapphire-blue horizon, a billion protozoa once swam through swift currents toward a far more distant horizon, an ancient community teemed with life whose ultimate goal was diversity. They swam toward a complex world that would contain the things that adhere to a child's memory, the fragrance of lilacs, sunlight glinting off snow, playground chains pressing into her palms. Our home in the Rocky Mountains, our perfect square acre of land, consisted of a fruit orchard, a vegetable garden, a row of aspen trees, and columbine bushes out front. Large lilac bushes grew next to the patio, filling the air with their scent. Hummingbird feeders hung in at least three of our windows. Apple Drive, Basalt, Colorado. We were a small community nestled at the banks of the Roaring Fork River, 10 miles from Aspen. Our road was long and made from gravel. A mile down, across from the bus stop, someone had horses, and my sister and I would climb the split-rail fence to feed them apples. Coyotes often howled at our back fence. I heard them in my dreams. We had come to Colorado when I was 6 months old, a family of four loaded into a tan Buick, a golden retriever called Rocky. You see, my father Wayne was in love with the West. He was born in Iowa, the same state as his hero, John Wayne. The youngest of three boys, he was practical by nature, but always possessed a dreamy spark of idealism, shining in the corner of his eye. He married young, a handsome man in an Air Force uniform, and fathered five children. The youngest of these, his only son, John Wayne Clark. My uncle's name is John, so under duress he claimed to have named his son after family, the practical thing to do. But in reality, poor young Johnny was named for a dream that his mother wouldn't follow, that would fail his father in the end. This was before I came into the picture. My father left his first wife and met my mother while she was working at his bank. 13 years younger than he was, pretty and petite, he saw a glint of mischief in her eyes that he knew, he recognized. So they married, he in a baby blue leisure suit, she in a purple flowered dress, her beehive rising halfway to the ceiling. He adopted her 2-year-old daughter. Between them, they now had 6 children, but she wanted another. For 5 years, she wore him down, while they both lost their fathers to cancer and heart disease. And then Jennifer was born, not breathing. My father took it as a sign to quit, but my mother was lost in grief. And so, 6 years after their marriage and many arguments later, I finally came along into the mugginess of a Midwestern fall, a full 6 weeks ahead of schedule. And as I started to crawl across the green shag carpet, which I swear is my first memory, it was decided that I would not grow up in this place, that my father would follow the old creed, "Go west, young man," his new family in tow. It was decided that all of their unrealized dreams would be pinned on me. So they packed the tan Buick, baby on Mama's lap, little girl with her palms pressed to the glass in back, Rocky the golden retriever pacing the seat beside her, father at the helm, steering the ship toward the new world where all of the answers were waiting. I am told that when I was 2 years old, I toddled into the living room of our Colorado home and climbed into my grandmother's lap. My mass of dark brown hair was wild and tangled from a nap. Playing with her blouse buttons, I innocently asked her age. 61, she replied. I looked at her in all earnestness and said, "When people get old, they die." My grandmother lived with us then, in an apartment attached to our big brick house. I was too young to remember, really, but I imagine her holding my hand, walking me to the bus for preschool, handing me a plastic trowel to help her dig in the garden, pulling up squash and leaf lettuce, snapping green beans into a colander at the picnic table, baking zucchini bread, monkey bread, banana nut bread. These scenes, I imagine them in time-lapse photography, my long hair in a braid, as I sit next to my grandmother on the worn red picnic table, watching my own children play on the land they have inherited, the sun setting behind the mountain in a haze of purples and pinks. But it wasn't to be. When people get old, they die. My grandmother is 85 now, and she loves to retell this story, to remind me that I am her weird grandchild, the only one to go to college, the only one to move away. Yet she also likes to remind me how I have inherited her hands, and when I sit with her, she strokes my long, slender fingers with her own.
To listen to this episode again or subscribe to the podcast, and for more information about this author and her work, go to KUMD.org and click on Programs, then Women's Words. Women authors of Minnesota who would like to read their work on Women's Words are welcome to submit their writing via email to KUMD@KUMD.org. Women's Words is produced at KUMD by Chris Harwood. The assistant producer is Haley Westfall. Music by Sharon Isbin. Funding for this program is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.